Blog Talk Radio.
Word up. Welcome to the Literary Underground presents Project U Voices Radio. I am one third of your host today, Mr. Frankie Metro. Sorry, we got a little bit got started a little bit late there, and I'm going to go ahead and go on record and saying that it was Tim Murray's computer that made me late, because I actually caught a case of what I like to call PCVD, which is personal computer venereal disease, from a link he posted on Facebook. So just wanted to thank Tim Murray for that. Appreciate that, buddy. That being said, let's go ahead and get to the caller on the line, which I believe could be one of my co-hosts of the evening. It could not. Not sure. Today's topic, of course, would be the relationship between author and publisher. Obligations are held on behalf of the publisher, and vice versa. So we'll have a little discussion on that. You guys feel free to call in. Number is 805-856-2808. Haven't started the chat room yet, but we will get that up and running here momentarily. We'll go ahead and go with my first caller. I believe it's area code 412. And then after that, we've got area code 415. So let's go ahead and go with 412. And you are live.
Hi, Frankie. This is Lynn. I'm just calling in. I have to be really fast because I'm driving to New York. I just wanted to say it's a great topic. And I'm sorry that I won't be able to chime in tonight. I do hope that a lot of people call in. And I think that you probably have Paul on the other line. I know that he has a lot to say. And I believe Michelle will be calling in too, and I, you know, hopefully you'll get some different perspectives on the issue of the author-publisher relationship. I think it's a very interesting question that you pose. A lot of different questions. So we'll see how it goes.
Yes. All right, great. Well, careful while you're driving. Definitely be careful.
Right.
And thank you for calling in and hanging out with us, and then of course doing everything that you always do, Lynn. So.
Right. I'll keep listening as much as I can. I just, you know, gotta keep my eyes on the road because it is hands free out here. So,
understandably. Understandably.
Right. So, thank you. Good night.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead and bring Paul in. We'll go ahead and get this discussion started. I believe this is Mr. Paul Corwin Roberts. Area code 415. You're live. Yeah.
Hi, Frankie.
Hey, Paul. How are you, man?
I'm good. I didn't quite catch the question. I just like Lynn, I'm on the road too, but at least I'm not driving, so I don't have to get off the line so quickly. I have a designated driver while I radio, while I blog talk.
Nice. Very nice. It's always important to have designated drivers, especially when you're discussing the independent press. I don't know about you, but I have a tendency to get road rage on occasion, and it goes hand in hand with the small press world sometimes too. So.
I know. That's why I try to text or talk on the cell phone as often as possible when I drive, and that keeps me from paying attention to what's going on the road, so I don't get mad about it.
awesome, man. Well, as I mentioned, today's topic, of course, is the relationship between author and publisher.
Publishers, I hate them. I hate them all.
Right.
Sorry. I'll try to keep it. I'll try to rein it in for you.
Hey.
I'm sorry.
You're the designated. You're not supposed to have road rage. But specifically, one of the questions that I had, and I really did want to get your take on this, as well as Lynn's and Michelle's, who I hope will call in momentarily. But one of the questions that I have for you, Paul, is, when is a project so far along in the process of publishing that it's generally considered bad form on the publisher's part to pull that project back or, you know, to end that agreement that they had with the author?
Definitely by the time that they have decided to, I would say, go with final editions, like if final edits have been done already. And you know, and they've gone over with a fine tooth comb all the edits that have to be done, and it goes in and they say, okay, well, this is our final cut, so to speak, or, you know, the copy that we're going to take to press. Once it hits that point, I think it's really bad form for the publisher to pull out. Although one of the situations we've been talking about tonight, I know one of our compatriots, Misty Rainwater Lights, had this problem with Goldfish apparently, and she's not the only author I've heard of having this problem, where they take pre-order sales for a book, but if they don't get to a certain number of pre-order sales, they don't release the book, and then the question is, what happens to all that other money that people put in? And some people say, well, it's no different than a Kickstarter project. Well, the thing about Kickstarter is, usually when you're giving money to Kickstarter, they don't go out of their way to say it's a donation, but if you look at the fine print and get into it, when you give money to Kickstarter, you're basically making a donation. You know, that's what that is. And you're taking a chance. You're gambling when you make that donation that you might get a copy of the book that you were supposedly going to buy out of it. And that's just the deal. When you have a press that doesn't announce that and they don't offer money back, it sounds like a scam to me, I have to say. It sounds very much like a scam to me.
I agree. It's a great point you brought up there about Misty, of course, and Goldfish Press. I was really appalled by that situation because, in all honesty, I had planned to submit a manuscript to them myself, where they were offering for different, manuscript contracts and whatnot. And I've actually had experience myself back in 2010. I was actually trying to put out an anthology with a group called the Hydra Syndicate that we had at the time. And there were some issues that came about on that. Best to make sure that everybody got their refunds after that project was canceled. So I have been on the other end of that, where I've had to cancel projects. I do see situations where that would be called for. But at the same time, whenever I had actually canceled the project, we weren't publishing pages or covers or anything like that. All that stuff was kept in the closet, and of course, everybody got their refunds back order for. So you got to. That's one. I guess that's another part of the thing is the responsibility that publishers and editors have towards their customers and their potential buyers. Magazines, you also have an obligation to them as well. So I guess that's like a third spectrum of that we didn't even consider, really. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, man. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I've had the experience with holding a contest. When I was at Cherry Bleeds, we did a contest where, we took 10, the entry fee was $10. And we had all kinds of problems. We never got to publication. But, we did pay the contest winners. We announced the contest winners, we announced the winning poems, and we paid out the prize money. So, we held our obligation. I think the most important thing for a press to do or a publisher to do is just to be really upfront about what the process is going to be like. And it helps if the publisher has their vision of what they're doing together. Sometimes they're just kind of on the fly making up as they go along, and they don't mean to necessarily – I know you have to give them their side of the argument. I think a lot of them don't mean to scam authors per se, but because of their lack of organization and not having their business model together, it winds up really hurting the authors. But otherwise, if they know what they're doing and they put their keep their models together, and like I said, are just very upfront with the risks that an author takes when they submit to a contest or for possible publication, I mean, I think they've covered themselves, and they know the author then knows, hey, buyer beware, but when they misrepresent or don't tell you the whole story, then it, leaves a really bad taste in the author's mouth. So I'll leave it at that and let other folks address the issue.
No, that's great. Great stuff there, man. And, we're going to keep moving on. We do have other people that want to chime in, of course, and we'll go ahead and tell everybody the number to call in, of course, if you have any questions, concerns, rants about the independent press or the issues at hand tonight. Feel free to call in. The number, of course, is 805-856-2808. I will go ahead and say the chat room is now open, so feel free to go in and log in there and discuss amongst yourselves. If you don't want to talk with us, that's fine with us as well. We're going to go ahead and go with 412, which I believe is Lynn Alexander. I know she's listening in and driving at the same time, so Lynn, if that is you, feel free to hang out for just a second. And then we also got an 818. So I'm going to bring both of you guys in, and of course I'll ask 412 to identify themselves. And then 818, I'll ask you to identify yourself as well. Oh, well, 412 dropped off. So there we go. 818, I'm going to go ahead and bring you right in. And you are...
Wow. Dan.
Hello.
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 Hey, is this FM?
It's FM. It's Tim.
No, this is not Tim.
Frank?
Yeah, this is Frankie Metro Man. How are you?
Yeah, hi, Frank. I'm doing great. I'm trying to get my computer to work, but how you doing, man?
I'm good. Just hanging out with Mr. Paul Corner Roberts. He's on the line as well.
Yeah.
And, what's going on,
FM? Pardon? Hello?
I said, how's it going, man?
It's going okay. And anyway, I kind of had trouble getting on, so I missed the very beginning. But I do know, talking about the relationship between publishers and writers, is that correct?
Yes.
That's correct.
No.
Okay. And, well, do you want to bring Lynn in, too, so she's not just sitting there hanging and then...
Well, she actually dropped off the line. Like I said, she's driving to New York right now. But glad that you're here, Evan. I've actually got a question for you, man. How formal would you say that the publication agreements are typically between an author and an editor? How formal? Should they be a little bit more formal, maybe? Like maybe less of a spoken contract, maybe a little bit more written or something? Or what can you know?
You know, it depends. Now, on the... my three novels, those were very formal contracts, you know, with the standard royalties, and then even then, two of the publishers goofed up and didn't know about the ISBN and the Library of Congress numbers and. Which can be fixed, but a lot of times I thought that IBSN or ISBN, a lot of your libraries won't pick them up.
Oh, just double check.
And there are a lot of sales there that get missed. So, but you know, if we're talking about like a. Like my chat book I just did with Bill Roberts. Pardon me. It was very informal. But I think, you know, if you trust the publisher and know him, and it's not a big major ordeal, that's pretty cool. What you have to watch out for, these... self-publishing, that's where you have to be careful. But mm-hmm. Now if you have someone like, say, Brian or someone that wanted to do a self-publishing as opposed to these people that's all they do, then it could be very, you know, pretty kickback.
Very informal. Okay. Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. That's a great point that you make there. It's all about whether or not you know the publisher or the editor personally. I think it boils down to more of a personal relationship sometimes
well,
in that situation.
Also, you know, and it depends on, you know, like I say, what the project is.
Right.
Brian and I go on, God, I don't know, when he first published me, for example, I was the shittiest poet and he was the shittiest publisher. And sometimes we'd top that, you know. Well, you're shittier than every shitty thing. And I think I'm okay with you. I'll take these three shitty poems. And I go, okay, it'll take a shithead like you to like them. So go ahead, you can have those three shitty poems. And so, you know, and that's cool. But
right.
But when it comes to, like I say, the thing with Ball of Smoke Press and like you say, I don't know. I mean, it's like I asked him a question about it. And he said, "Well, didn't you submit anything else?" I didn't know you wanted me to. So that's kind of how that went. But if you're actually talking as a writer and Gordon have a chat book, or you know, something you're going to put a lot of work into. That's a little different. But, you know, most publishers that you're dealing with, chances are you're going to know at least about them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that damn computer. I'm trying to create my own goddamn talk show. And I'm just
Well, anyway. you make some great points there, Effin, about that, and I really appreciate you hanging out with us. And I did want to say, go ahead and tell, we did have 360 on the line. I know that you were hanging there for a couple minutes, and feel free to call back in, of course. Number to call in is 856-2808.
I'm just going
to
hang here, if it's okay.
Yeah, definitely, man. No, don't go anywhere. We still have plenty of more show left. I did have another question here for everybody. Just go ahead and pose. Now, I know that somebody had brought up the idea of certain authors that would go to publications that ask for pushcart nominations or best of the net nominations. Paul, what's your opinion on that?
I think that's completely up to the publisher. You know, the publisher has to decide what type of work is going to best represent their press to, you know, that particular institution. That's, you know, I mean, sure. I mean, if an author is good, I mean, I know there are authors out there who will lobby for it. And, you know, and maybe they're confident in their work and maybe the publisher agrees with them. Hey, you know, it's, but in the end, I think it's the publisher's call on that. It's the publisher who has the onus of the nomination on them, and they're the ones that have to justify the nominations. It's really not up to the author to do that. That's how I understand the push cards to work. And it that doesn't take away from the honor of being nominated at all, but it's a lot more subjective. It's a lot more subjective, and it's, you know, you're dealing with, and it can, I guess, you know, you can get a lot of politics between authors and a single publisher when it comes to that conversation. But, you know, in the end, you know, I think it's okay for the author to ask, but it's a little nervy. I do think it's a little nervy. And if they're going to ask, they should at least be respectful and humble about it.
It's inappropriate.
I could see where it would be.
Hmm.
I'm
sorry, Ed. Didn't mean to cut you off.
You know,
right,
real quick, you know, if you talk to Al Winans or anyone like me, it's been around for a while. If you ain't published by someone like a Malone when he was around or a John Martin or those people, you're not going to get chosen anyway. But it's a nice nomination. But again, I agree with Frankie or Paul, whoever's talking, that it's up to the publisher.
There you go. We do have a little bit of a background noise. I'm not sure what's going on with that, so might be somebody's computer there and whatnot. I'm going to go ahead and bring in 360, who's been waiting very patiently. We'll get their opinions on this topic. I'm sure they have something to add to this real quick. 360, you are live. 360.
Yeah.
Hi, this is 360.
Yeah, this is.
Hey, who we got here?
This is Stephen Perky.
Oh, hey, Stephen Perky. Cool.
Yeah, I was just
sorry, man.
I didn't even realize I was on the queue. I was just listening to the show.
Well,
but, you know. Since you called me on here,
you're
I'll
on the hot spot
outside.
Now, guy.
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, it's a good thing that you called in, Stephen. Of course, you're the editor there at Modus Operandi Fanzine. You guys are definitely kicking ass over there in Portland area. What can you tell us about what do you have to contribute to the topic here at hand, sir? What do you think about writers that go out and ask publishers for pushcart nominations and what have you?
Oh, fuck. You know, I don't know anything about that kind of shit. I don't have any input.
Okay. Well, I mean, just say, what do you think about that?
What's that?
Hello?
I think you lost somebody. I don't know who it was, but...
Oh. Are we still live?
Yeah, but I didn't hear you.
I thought it was there. I thought it was on the line. We got a lot of dead air. Oh, man.
Boy. Yeah, and I keep hearing a... sort of like a... Phyllis or someone in the background, you know.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know. It's kind of some noise or some kitchen noise or background noise or something or other.
Oh, you got you got someone in the kitchen?
I'm in the car. I'm going over the San Francisco Bay Bridge right now.
Huh? You're in the car?
I'm going over the San Francisco Bay Bridge right now. Maybe you hear the bumps and the speed bumps in the background.
Oh, going across the Bay Bridge, yeah?
Yes, right now I am, yeah.
Well, that's another place to do a talk show.
It's a unique experience, let me tell you. But, are you still there, Frankie?
Yeah, I'm back, man. I lost the connection, actually. I lost my Wi-Fi connection for a second there, so I'm back, though.
Excellent.
Yeah. I didn't even hear Perky's response there, but I'm sure it was something. I have to go back to the archives and listen to that. So.
That was funny because he's a publisher, right? And he like has no real opinion. I guess he's okay if his authors, you know, hit him up for nominations or something. But
he just didn't want to get involved.
He just didn't want to get involved. You know, some authors just won't nominate, some publishers just won't nominate either. They don't really take the process all that seriously, or they're just too busy, or they don't have the time. It's really hard for the small presses that are basically functioning because they're, you know, their publishers, the people who run the press, actually have to work and have jobs, and you know, are basically doing everything they can to get by. And you know, it's a lot of work to do a nomination. It's a lot to ask. It's a lot to ask of a press to do that. But it's good that, you know, we do have small presses that do it, and we're lucky to have those that do.
May I interject something when you say you have to work real hard? Now, this is something that I've talked to publishers about, and I've talked to very well-known writers. I can't buy every, print issue of something Brian does of Zygote. I can't buy everything that, but if I'm included in something, well, besides my contributor's copy, I will make it a point to buy one or two, you know, right in the Ford, just to help them out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and, you have too many writers, they'll take their one comp and then bitch, and, you know, cut back on a beer or two, you know,
I agree. Best medicine right there, definitely best medicine to kick back with a beer or two and just chill the fuck out on it.
Yeah, what I mean is, you can do without one beer maybe to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And besides, you can give that book to somebody and maybe get laid. Or,
there you go.
Yeah. Well, I'm for wishful thinking, but continue if you. I'm sorry, but no. I mean, I'm not going to mention any names, but there are some publishers that I don't know if they're listening or not. My computer's screwing up all day, so there have been times if I've had the money, you know, I said, well, I'll give you a hand here a little bit, you know. I don't mind doing it because, something else, that I should mention that is something for your publishers to keep in mind is I'm sending Michelle some tear sheets from the newspaper column I had until I got sick. And when she's done with what she wants to, whatever we decide to do with them, Brown University years ago accepted my archives. So once, like, if you publish something and you find out that, like, Al Winans is at Brown, I'm at Brown, so-and-so was at UC Santa Cruz, that library, you
right.
just contact them. They'll probably buy a copy or more.
There you go. I like it. We do have another caller on the line, actually. I believe it's actually a Skype caller. Waiting very patiently. And Skype caller, you are live and unmuted, so.
I keep hearing a dog bark.
Oh, no. That's Phyllis.
I was down here at Walmart this afternoon. I'm still trying to wash the pepper spray out of my eyes. They got VCRs on sale.
Was that off-duty guy that got you?
Somebody sprayed me right in the eyeball, Frank, Fred, not Tim.
That was that off-duty.
Sprayed my eyeballs really bad.
I told you to watch out for those trailer park bombs.
I got a VCR.
For like $1.32?
Now, 119, but...
That's awesome. Beta or VHS?
I think it tastes Laserdisc.
No, nice.
Dave, Paul, Corman, Robert.
You got a fantastic deal on that.
Paul, Corman, Roberts.
That's me.
Close your eyes while you're going over that bridge.
That's too beautiful, man. The lights are so beautiful at night.
Where the hell's Frankie Metropolis?
Well, I don't know.
He died.
Frankie? He's getting in the way.
Yep.
Is that you, Frankie?
Yeah, that's him. Yep.
Why on earth was Albuquerque canceled?
Because I don't know. Why was Tim Murray so adverse to staying at a hostel? I think that's
the
question.
You're gonna have to go ask Tim Murray.
Yeah, I know.
That.
We're gonna have to ask him. To be honest with you, I was actually
get him
ask
on
him
here
about,
and interview him.
Well, I was going to ask Tim Murray about what his thoughts were on the discussion that was going on. But since you're on the line, maybe we could ask you.
Yeah, this here's Ed Standish. Go ahead and ask away, Frankie.
All right, Ed Standish. Great. I'm glad to hear it. Ed, Ed Standish, where do you stand on authors requisitioning for pushcart nominations and what have you?
First of all, I don't know what requisition means.
Evidently, I don't either, so.
I can't even spell that word, Frankie Metropolis.
It's a hard one, man. It is definitely a hard one. What do you think about...
What I think ought to happen is that Albuquerque needs to go back on.
Uh-huh. Oh, well. That's another topic, though.
Hey, Frankie.
You fucked it up.
Frankie, do you know Richard Vargas?
Yeah, well, I sure do. Yeah.
Question. Have you got a relationship with him at all? Because I him and I go back to him. In fact, he just asked me to submit some stuff for his next issue he's working on.
Fred?
Yeah?
Are you at a fast food drive through?
What do you want?
Supersize it, baby.
I have your baby.
You say what? That's not my
I'd like
baby.
To have your baby, effing right.
No. I sorry, but you're the wrong sex. But you probably have Frankie or Tim's or Paul's. Hey, Paul, you could drop Paul's off the Bay Bridge.
Hey, you know,
Chef Art Mouses.
It's too late now. I'm off the bridge now.
Ah, shit. Because you know how to make your
dead
baby.
Where's Lynn Alexander?
You know how to make your dead baby float, don't you?
Somewhere.
Huh?
I missed that last part.
I say you know how to make your dead baby float, don't you?
How do you do that? Tell me,
Evan,
how do you do that?
Well, Tim's a big root beer man. Got all you need is like a gallon of root beer and, you know, big old chunk of ice cream and a, do I have to say the rest?
Oh, there you go.
Dead baby.
Oh, God.
I know it.
Hello?
You made me say it.
Frankie.
Oh my God! Somebody's got the police scanner on in the background.
Frankie.
Oh God! I
know it. Doing an awful job of moderating this show.
I think his Wi-Fi keeps dropping out.
That's his problem. Told him that hospital doesn't give free Wi-Fi.
Right, so you can't be posting, compromising YouTube videos at 3 in the morning.
No, on hostile television. Oh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride on a horse open sleigh. Hey. Hey. Dashing through the effing right in one horse open sleigh. O'er the effing right we go, laughing all the way.
Plus somebody's bored.
Bells on Paul Corman Roberts ring, making Metropolis happy. Hey, you effing right, do you have your Christmas tree up?
Yeah, I keep it up year round. My brother and I, we've had it up, it's not original, but we kind of got the idea in Vietnam, but we just got a dead tree branch, and we put it in some sand and put some, pine cones around it and wrapped it in foil, the pot, and... Then with fishing line, we had a cartridge hanging from it, and we called it a cartridge in a bear tree. And then every once in a while, we'd flock it. We were really feeling ambitious.
Does Santa Claus ever put presents under there?
Fuck no. we were a little paranoid, and I think we quit shooting the son of a bitches if they, because they're not really real, but if we quit shooting them, maybe they would.
But then you get the whole,
sleigh and everything, man. And then we got deer, venison and for the year and.
You ever make venison turkey?
Venison turkey.
Venison turkey.
Oh, jerky.
Yeah, jerky, like jerky.
Oh yeah, venison jerky. I'm not a big fan of that, but me and some friends lived on about 50 pounds of venison and then cream of wheat with water only and watermelon. And I don't eat much venison anymore. We had it every way you can think of. And
you guys are making me like really, really hungry right now.
Oh well, that's get yourself good. Something to eat.
I'm gonna have to. I am back. Sorry about the faulty Wi-Fi connection here. We do got Paul Corman Roberts back on the line. 415, you are back on the air. We also have a 217 and a 419 on the switchboard. You guys have been waiting very patiently. I do appreciate that. So I hope we'll go ahead and bring those people in, and we'll go ahead and keep the show rolling. Do apologize about technical difficulties. We do have 217, you are
on the air.
You're on the air.
Hi, guys. What the hell are you talking about?
That must be Michelle.
I think that is Michelle, yes.
Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
How you
your
doing?
Sister Michelle.
I heard something about venison. I don't know.
We got a little off subject.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That happened a little bit.
Michelle, how do you feel when authors hit you up to be for the Pushcart nomination?
Well, I think it's a little presumptuous, you know. If a press hasn't already done nominations previously or previous year or something, I could see that, you know, and they say, hey, this is out there, you can do it, and I'm interested. But, you know, for like Red Fez, we've done it, and I think, you know, obviously we're in the process, so we're looking at work, and I don't know, it seems kind of annoying.
Right. And,
yeah.
You know, Michelle, you've got a lot of experience in the independent press world. You've been involved with many different projects. How often do you think that you see things like that in the small press world? How often do authors actually come to you and ask for nominations and whatnot?
That has only happened.
They actually ask.
That particular thing has only happened a couple times. But, you know, at least monthly we're getting some really bizarre, you know, requests or complaints. And I just think, why would you bring that to a publication? It's just your chances for getting published again do go down, you know.
What's
why,
the percentage
why do you
want
to
annoy?
They go down? Oh, I'd say about 75%.
75%. These people actually get a hold of you and ask to be nominated for things.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Is it FMI?
Really amazing.
No, FM Wright. He's been nominated, I think, twice in his entire life.
Well, I think
yeah, another
nominated Fred one time.
Huh?
It's a lot of work, you know, to go through, especially now that we're monthly at Red Fez, to go through all of everything that we've published. You know, obviously we publish them because we liked the work. So to find the ones that we like the most or that we think best represent the publication or need more exposure, it's hard to do.
And you only pick, like, a certain amount, right?
Well, yeah, you can only nominate so many for each award, so.
Well, I mean, like I say, you know more than I do, but I mean, yeah, I mean, your total nominations for the year are next to nil almost compared to what you published, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the different awards I've found, maybe 20 different pieces.
That's why it's an honor. I mean, that is really, seriously, you know, because it is, even when it comes down to individual taste of the publisher, it's still, it's an honor. It's an achievement just to be nominated.
Well, yeah, I've been nominated twice, and I've been published going back to the 60s, and I'd heard of the Pushcart Prize, but I never paid much attention to it. And matter of fact, I had to ask Al Wyman's what it was. You know, rather than look it up. He told me,
yeah.
Just, you know, if you're not being published by, like, the guys that put Pushcart Prize out, I forget who the hell they are. Forget it almost. The click.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, most people nominate. There's so many nominations, very few people win.
But it's still an honor.
I think the more that you participate, obviously, the more chance that, you know, they're going to start to recognize your publication and the people who are submitting. And basically the work should speak for itself. You know, the author shouldn't have to contact the publisher and say, hey, you know, remember you liked it well enough, now you should nominate it. I think that's just really...
Yeah, man.
Well, you know,
I was actually going to ask you, Michelle, how often do you see, you know, being a person that's actually put out stuff in print as well as online, how often do you see print publications or whatnot winning out in the pushcart awards themselves? Do you think that print publications have more of an edge over the nominations as opposed to online?
Yeah. Well, I think they did, but I don't think they do anymore. And there's so many awards that are strictly for online publications. And, you know, they're gaining prestige. So I think that argument of print versus online is pretty much useless. I mean,
yeah,
it's here
I
to
agree,
stay.
Especially
that's the way
in today's
it's going.
Or you might find some of these more established awards, you know, developing their own online categories. I don't think they can ignore it forever, you know, because when you have a bad experience with a publisher, it is going to, self-publishing is not the joke that it used to be, especially with, you know, Kindle and iPad uploads that you can do now, where, you know, even though you're still getting jocked by Amazon or by Barnes & Noble or by Apple or whoever you're uploading your material to, the fact of the matter is it's still a greater percentage of the money of the sold books goes to the author in that situation than if they're going through a traditional press, where the traditional payout to the author is 12.5%. You know, it's just, it's a whole new world out there. And, you know, if we're going to have this award structure in place, then that new reality has to be acknowledged at that level, too.
Right. Hey, Michelle, you want to do the whorehouse Kindle? My sister's been hounding me.
Yeah, I haven't out Kindle yet, and that's later on the road. But
I'm just joking. But,
you know, and this whole thing with Goldfish, I think the part that bothered me the most was just how fishy it seemed. You know, either circumstances happen that you have to pull out of a project, or it didn't. We're going to have to, but there's still time to save it if it hurries up and orders. I mean,
that
was it?
Fishy.
Yeah, that was a really unfortunate incident. Of course, you had remarked in a previous conversation about how, and I've seen this from Misty's posts and everything on Facebook and whatnot. She puts a lot of energy into her promotions and putting her stuff out there to get read, and so I love it. It's a great thing about her, and you know, just to see that like taken away from her after, you know, all the spells that she's had and whatnot. That really was kind of like heartbreaking to me. Personally, I just thought I remember that she had said something like it was just another disappointment or something like that, you know. And
yeah.
That really
so
that's
what
that's
happened?
The core of it. Yeah.
So what happened? I didn't hear about this.
That gal releases about 4 chapbooks a week.
Yeah.
Some weeks anyway.
Sure. But you know. When a publisher goes to the trouble of, you know, marketing a book, and if they set up views or reviews, or and you have an author who's willing to get out there and do all that, then they should support you 100%. You know.
Right.
And I think
especially
deep
in the process.
Especially when they say they're going to support the author, and then what did happen? And what happened to all those pre-order sales? Where did all those people get their money refunded? I'd be willing to bet they didn't.
Right. Well, we do have two more callers on the line. I do appreciate you guys waiting. We do have a 419 and a 530 on the line. I'm going to go ahead and bring in 419, see who that is, and see what they can't weigh in on the discussion. And I'm going to go ahead and... I'm sorry. Right. It's area code 419. You are...
You are, well, I think you're live. Yeah.
I would like to apologize for all the complaints that Red Fez has been getting.
Well, they would.
It's
yeah,
all my
yeah
fault.
They would come for Michael Grover. Yep. That's yeah true.
That would.
How you doing, man?
68%. Yeah.
What's up?
How are you, sir?
I'm all right. Hanging in there, you know?
Yeah, that's good, man.
All you can do these days.
Rejected all my haikus I sent in.
Do you know anything about these haikus, Michael Grover?
Well, I'm a haiku Nazi, man.
He's a haiku fascist. That's cool, man. It's awesome. Well, I tell you, I mean, you're an editor yourself, Covert Press, and of course, you know,
yeah,
at Red Fez. What's your take on the situation that happened with Misty Rainwater Lights? I know that you had a little knowledge about that. What was your take on that?
I didn't have any knowledge about that. I don't know nothing about
no
it.
No? Oh, okay.
All I really said was that if the press said they were going to put out the book, they should have supported them and put out the book. I mean, it's like faith that you got to have. You know, you can't just pull out because you're not getting enough pre-orders. That's bullshit.
Right.
Well, the truth of the fact of the matter is Goldfish Press has zero budget, and they're pretending to be some kind of a big publishing house. And they got Fish got too big for the
just looks like wildfire, you know? It's a tough
thing. That's why they never heard of them.
They don't have any money.
I mean, that's the thing.
That's one thing I will not do. I will not pay somebody to publish me.
Yeah.
Fuck no.
You shouldn't.
No.
I mean, I do kind of think it was a ploy to sell more books, in a way.
No.
Well, yeah. How do you know? And then how are they accountable for the fact that how do you know when they reach that magical number when they're like, okay, we can officially publish this. We've had enough sales. What if they never hit those magical number of sales? I mean, who holds them accountable to that?
You start a press and you think you're going to sell books, and then you find out the truth that you don't really sell that much, you know?
Hmm.
And you just kind of got to do it because you love it at that point.
Well, who is this press? Or are they still around?
Goldfish. Goldfish Press. And to be fair, you know, we haven't heard from them. They haven't weighed in. We haven't heard their side of it. But it's an odd business practice, you know.
We don't need to weigh in. I mean, I'm sure they have a story, but.
Everybody's got a story, man. Especially writers. Especially writers. Yeah. Well, we've got 6 minutes left of live streaming. Number to call in, of course, has disappeared from my switchboard. Not sure where that is. That's great. But we got 6 minutes left. I do have an area code 530 on the line. I'm going to go ahead and try to bring them in.
Maybe it's Goldfish Press.
It might be Goldfish Press. All right, let's find out. 530, you are a goldfish.
How are you guys doing? This is Bill Gaynor out in Northern California.
Oh, shit! It's Bill Gaynor!
Yeah, how are you guys doing? I've been listening to you all on and off here when you guys weren't fooling around so much. I was really curious. I got your email thing here from Frank, and I thought, I got to listen to the show tonight. And Paul, driving across the bridge, where are you going anyway, man? You know,
I was going back to Oakland, man.
Yeah. Well, they run you out of town again, huh?
Oh, man, that keeps happening.
That's my problem, too. Anyway, no, I'm calling because, you know, I got the R.L. Crow publications, and then I'm also editing for, who am I? Primal Urge out here in Northern California, you know. And we've been very good. And we do very good, you know, all the way around, especially, you know, the R.L. Crow. And a lot of that has to do with our
business. Yeah, you guys are hot stuff, man.
Well, you know, we try to be, and we try to be straight up. We've been in business for a few years now, you know, 10 years or so. And you know, we've won a few prizes you guys were talking about. But, you know, we won a pin award here a while back, you know. So that gives us some credibility. You know, it's a difficult game out there. And, you know, Michelle was talking a little bit about, you know, what's going on now in the online publications. I stayed away from even sending my stuff to online publications for a long time. In fact, I probably wouldn't have sent as much as I do today if not for Michelle, because Michelle got a hold of me one time and said, geez, why don't you send some stuff? We're doing an editor's publication, you know, and I like you to do that, and I did, you know, and she took some of the stuff, which was great. And but what I'm seeing going on.
Yeah, I got rejected for that issue.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she's tough, you know. That girl's tough, you know. That's why I like that. But anyway, you know, no, it's you know, what I see happening in the self-publishing business and in the online business is starting to mature a little bit. But not so much the self-publishing stuff, but the online stuff, where, you know, the editors are being a little more critical of what they're accepting to put in their publications. And the editors are viewing their publications more seriously than they were here, you know, 5-10 years ago. You know, the online stuff is often thought of, you know, we'll do a one-off here, you know, and then if it's not here next week, nobody will know, nobody will care. Well, you know, now you got things like the Fez that have been around for quite a few years, you know, and then the other outfits, you know, and it's all good stuff. But, you know, the relationship with the and that's the other thing, too, I'm starting to see more of. You know, we've always, as editors out here with R.L. Crow and with Primal Urge, you know, we do a hands-on thing. We just don't sit around and pick poems, you know. We or pick whatever we're going to publish. You know, we're very we like to develop stuff. And it's like at R.L. Crow, we don't accept a manuscript. We say, send us 200 poems, you know, and we'll take a look and see what you got. And, you know, a lot of people don't have 200 poems. And even beyond that, you know, most of those poems probably need work, you know, to hit the page. People don't seem to remember or seem to know anymore that, you know, what goes on the stage isn't often suitable for the page and vice versa, you know. So,
absolutely.
You know, it has to be pounded out and straightened up where it makes sense. So you have a lot of work to do as an editor, and you know, you have to accept those responsibilities seriously. And as a press, you know, one of you guys' question was, is how formal do you get in your obligations? We get very formal, you know, written contracts, all that kind of stuff, you know. And our business model is kind of set up so everybody can make some money. But one of the things that we do, and we work only with working writers. So if you're not out doing the shows and hitting the bricks, you know, we can't do anything for you. You know, the question was, you know, who's going to sell the books? And the writer's going to sell the books. We can't sell books. We can support you. You know, we put ads in magazines and we put ads in online things and do this kind of stuff, get reading schedules lined up for some people, do all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is if you're only going to do 3 readings to support a book, we can't help you, you know.
Bill, where are you located at in Northern California?
I'm up in Grass Valley, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
you know,
up there where Johnny is.
Between Sacramento and...
I used to open some record stores in Sacramento a few years ago.
Yeah. I remember between Sacramento and Reno here.
Right.
So anyway, what I'm saying is, you know, to do a small press is to really assume an obligation here, especially if you want these things to work and you want them to pay for themselves. And that's part of the deal, you know. Most small
presses. Yeah, you got to get the writer's got to get out there and work it. I mean, but at least at R.L. Crow, you guys are really upfront about that. And I mean, the fact that you can even take out some advertising or do a little promo stuff for the author. I mean, that's so much more than so many other small presses do. And that's, I mean, you know, you're very much like a traditional press with a real business model. Some of these presses out here don't even have a real business model. They're just kind of on a slash and burn sort of thing. And again, I don't want to indemnify Goldfish Press necessarily,
But
they don't have
but I know there are presses
either.
Out there that are just taking submissions. They're taking submission fees for contests that don't exist. And it's you can read it back to post writers. Buyer beware, man.
That kind of thing, and I don't know who Goldfish Press is. I have seen the Rainwater Girl's name around before, but that stuff's been around for a long time. You know, we're a racket here that we don't make any money, but people can make money off us.